Hello, friends. It's a Greg Cody Tuesday here on the local hour. The local hour, right? I think it's the local hour. It's the local hour with Greg Cody, Chris Cody.
Hello.
Roy Bellamy.
Hello.
Ant, you look very sad today. You have a dark hoodie on. You have dark headphones,
cold,
a dark
Billy.
T-shirt. It is. It's really cold today. I know people across the country don't want to hear this because it's like 74 degrees or something. But I took my dog out and I thought I was going to get some chills. It was very windy out, and I feel like the sniffles are coming, and it's not a good time to be getting sick, because not only will other people think that there's more wrong with you, but I myself will think there's something wrong with me if I get sick. Mm-hmm. How's everyone doing today?
There is a really weird thing now with the pandemic where you start like looking at yourself and being like, okay, I kind of feel weird. Is this an onset of coronavirus? I'm not 100% sure. Like the last like 8 months, I felt one time where I had the sniffles and I was like, oh, that's not good. And then I got tested and it was negative, but I feel like everybody's super sensitive to their bodies now.
What's your guys' move with how many times a day you're like touching your forehead or checking your temperature? Like anytime I feel anything, the very first thing, feel my forehead. Does it feel a little warm? Check my temperature. Like it's just, you have to.
Here's what I've learned about taking my temperature. I seem to run a little colder than the normal person. I'm not clocking in at 98.6 every time I take my temperature, right? So obviously, if I'm colder, then that leads to, why am I only 95 degrees today? Because that seems a little colder than it should be. And when the studio was opening back up again, I had to go in a couple times because Mike was on paternity and Roy couldn't go in. And they sent like this kit, like this go back to work kit that included a bunch of masks and all kinds of things. And one of the things was a thermometer, but like a thermometer that took it to the 10th, right? So like this will tell me if I'm 98.61 or 98.63 on a given day. So then when I'm like taking my temperature and I'm clocking in at 96.58, I'm like, there's something wrong here. I need to look this up.
It takes it to the 100th, right? It doesn't round up to the 10th.
I guess, yeah, it would be the hundreds because the 10th would be one decimal. I meant two decimal.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah, boy. Yeah,
I mean, you're more like tomato, potato. Yeah.
There you go.
Potato.
I take my temperature probably a half a dozen times a day. And
what? A half a dozen times a day? Better safe than sorry.
Yeah, in the morning, you know, midday, late in the night, whenever. I'm obsessive about that. And I'm a steady 90, and Billy's right, it tends to run a little bit low. I'm a steady 97.6. So if I'm all of a sudden 98.3, I'm like, whoa, do I need to tell my wife what the hell's going on with my body? So
the presses.
Yeah, everybody's fine-tuned right now in the pandemic age, I think.
You guys also take your blood pressure and your pulse a lot because that's something that I do, and I don't know that that has anything to do with coronavirus or any other medical things that could be
going on.
I've never
done
that.
I've never done that.
Really?
I mean, I've been at like CVS and I've taken my blood pressure, but that's only if I'm bored.
So everyone doesn't get a blood pressure machine that takes their blood pressure and their pulse and they check that on a regular basis, huh?
I mean, you could do that over your phone. There are apps for that now.
I don't believe these apps.
Your
these
blood apps, pressure?
These
phone?
Apps are getting a little ahead of themselves. It's like, relax, okay? You know exactly how many steps I'm taking. You know exactly my blood pressure. I'm over you.
Yeah, what's with all those steps and the Fitbits and all that? Because you're taking the same number of steps, whether they're being recorded or not.
Wow, right? That could be a back in my day. Like back in my day, you just walked. You didn't worry about how many steps you were taking.
Yeah, that's true. I will do that because that's a much better topic than the one I'm doing today. So we'll.
Oh man, are you doing the one that I suggested?
Yes.
Oh man, today's a classic, guys. It's a classic.
No.
Is it a classic because you've done it before?
It's a terrible. It's one of those ones that everyone's gonna hear the first word he says and be like, "What?"
It's a low confidence back in my day. Let's just put it that way. Uh-huh. I'm trying to lower expectations so that even if it's mildly bad, it will be better than expected.
Right. The thing about those step trackers is that I feel like if I'm taking steps without them on, I'm wasting steps, which is ridiculous because the steps count exactly the same. But if I have something that's monitoring my steps, and I go for a walk or I exercise without it on, then I'm like, I wasted all those steps. Those steps didn't count. And it's only because I can't see them on my stupid Fitbit, not because I'm not actually taking the steps. But I'm not counting my steps.
It's only motivation, Billy. That's all it is.
It's not even so much motivation as in I feel like I'm being shamed by a watch. And I feel it's like peer pressure. It's like, come on, get up, fatty. 250 steps this hour. You haven't done them yet. Do something. And then I'm looking at it and it's like, wow, I'm at 3,000 steps for the day. It's 5 o'clock. How am I going to get to 10,000? It's impossible at this time. And it's just the watch kind of fat shaming me. And I don't know why it is that we buy into this stuff.
And then you'll start like doing something to trick the app, like taking fake steps. It's like, what's really happening?
So the best thing, I think we've talked about this before, the best time that you would get steps ever, that I would get steps, is when you go to a theme park. So like you go to Universal, you go to Disney World, one of those, and you get home and you look at your watch and it's like, holy crap, I have 15,000 steps and it's only like 4 p.m. How did I manage to do that? And I'm clearly capable of doing it. Why is it that on my regular days, I can only get like 3,000 steps? How lazy am I being, right? But also, as you get closer to midnight or whatever time it is, I guess it has to be midnight, right? When the day rolls over on your Fitbit tracker, if you're at like 9,940 steps or so, and you're like, I'm dead tired. I've been doing a bunch today. I've been known to lay down and just start swinging my arms.
Yeah.
Like I'll swing them wildly to try to trick it into things. Because it's on my wrist. So if it's on my wrist, I'll just start swinging wildly as though I'm taking steps.
Watch is on your wrist, but the phone's in your pocket, so the phone goes by your leg movements.
Right. It's all GPS tracked, basically. That's how they know how many steps you're taking, because you're moving every so often.
That's another thing. People have different length legs. You know what I mean?
That's true.
So, like, I have to walk a distance, and I'm, like, you know, 6'1"-ish, and my wife is somewhere in the 5'2", 5'3 range, so she's taking a lot more steps to get the same distance that I'm getting. You're GPS, huh, Greg?
Yeah, how about that? I think a very interesting challenge would be to shoot for the low end. What's the fewest steps I can take in a day? Can I get under 100? Is that even possible in everyday life, do you think?
Wow. I think you have to be bedridden to get under 100 steps a day, right? Because think of the bare necessities that you need to do. So let's say you want to have the laziest day. You know what, guys? Does everyone have a way to track their steps?
Yes, my iPhone does it.
Okay, so let's all commit to checking in next Tuesday, the day before Thanksgiving. Actually, this might be a better
Thanksgiving's next week?
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. Day before Thanksgiving.
My God.
This may be a better Thanksgiving break exercise, but let's all commit and make a pact that we will all one day between now and, let's say, two Tuesdays from now, that way we have some wiggle room, to take the least amount of steps possible, and we'll all check in and see what each person's low was.
Deal. Listeners, you do it too. Tweet us your whatever happens.
Hashtag low steps, and tell us how few steps you take in a day. Now, this is the thing, listeners. I know that if you do a hashtag low steps today, you're lying, because there's no way that you could have done this by the time that you were listening. But hashtag low steps, and if you're sending in like 28, I'm not believing you, all
right? Right.
I feel like under 500 is going to be very difficult for most people.
I'm going to be taking giant steps to just elongated, ridiculous steps.
Downright leaps. You're going to be leaping from step to step.
I will be leaping.
I just now imagine you lunging about your house and your wife looking at you like, what are you doing, Greg?
I'll be like a triple jumper. What's that called? The triple jump in the Olympics? Mm-hmm. Where you only take 3 steps to go like 30 feet or something.
So I want to talk some Kim Ng, because my dad was was part of the press conference yesterday. Yesterday, I just happened to click on the press conference, and the very first thing I hear is, go ahead, Greg Cody. And then Greg asked the question, and his voice, you sounded good, actually. I was expecting just all of a sudden here, but you sounded decent. So I want to talk about that. And I also... I don't know why I just laughed.
Why did you laugh, dude?
Roy's going under the knife on Wednesday, boys. And we need to support him. He needs us to be there for him. Roy, tell the people what's happening. Are you going to be okay?
I am getting nasal surgery. Apparently the ENT says that I have some disease in my sinus and a deviated septum. It might be leading to my headaches. So tomorrow... I don't think I'm going under the knife. I think there's going to be
like sounds good.
Stuffed up the nose.
Wow.
But it sounds good for surgery. Yes.
I too have a deviated septum, Roy. So welcome to the club. And I'm wondering, is your doctor McGillicuddy, or do you have somebody else?
Oh, Christ.
No, no, I don't think I can give the name of the doctor on the radio, but okay. No, it's not Dr. McGillicuddy.
Okay, I was just curious.
Uh-huh. Right. I think I speak for all of us here in the Zoom and all the listeners when I say, obviously, we hope speedy recovery, you make it through, you have no bad side effects, no complications, and also tomorrow does not count for hashtag low steps because those are different circumstances. You cannot use a surgery day as your hashtag low steps day.
Well, as far as quick recovery is concerned, they said 3 days is the recovery time, so that's pretty quick. So hopefully it'll be faster than that.
It was funny. Last week I saw on the calendar Roy's out Wednesday, and it said sick day, and I was like, wow, look at Roy planning ahead on a sick day. That's the way you do it. You just like say I'm gonna be sick next Wednesday and then do it a couple weeks in advance. I'm like,
that thing's been in there. That thing's been in there like 2 months, and I was always looking. I'm like, how's Roy planning a sick day? Did he mean this for his personal calendar and accidentally put it on the show calendar? Did that happen? And now we're just pretending there's some sort of surgery because everyone's seen that you were planning to be off tomorrow. Lots of questions.
Surgery was booked 2 months ago.
Well, hold on a second. You're supposed to have 3 days of recovery, but you're already planning on being at work the next day. You've just decided this is something I'm overcoming in a couple of hours.
Well, I don't know how my body's going to feel following the surgery, and I'm not going out. You know,
oh man, if I'm you, I'm doing 2 days there. I would have put 2 days in the calendar.
Roy's also off all next week, so we're not going to see Roy until after Thanksgiving.
Roy, do you want us to be there after you wake up from surgery, like all of us there in a Zoom, like waiting for you and like cheering you on?
I'll go physically.
No, as soon as I wake up, I'm calling in a favor and I'm going because I can't drive home and I can't get a ride share. So I'm calling in a favor to get a ride home.
What time?
Nah, I want to do it.
I don't know, around 4 o'clock.
Okay, so we're all going to go. Perfect.
Let's all take our cars and see which car Groggy Roy gets into.
Yeah, ooh, Roy.
Nice.
I'm probably getting the strangest car the way I'm going to end up feeling after this.
Well, good luck. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, Greg Cody, let's get down to it. You were part of the press conference yesterday. Give us your first impressions being able to hear Kim Ng interact with the media. What was she like?
She was excellent, as I would have expected. She's been in public life and baseball life a long time. I wrote a column about this that people can read at MiamiHerald.com. I think it's a great hire. She was very composed and well-spoken and all that stuff. And we also had the Miami Herald had sort of a private Zoom with her after the main press conference, which I'm probably not supposed to mention, but we had a few minutes just to talk one-on-one off the record and get to know her a little bit. And she's a cool lady. You know, she's a Bob Marley fan. She's got a dog named Marley. She just hiked 30 miles. She's a golfer. But mostly she's a baseball lifer, man. And what a resume. I mean, when you've been an assistant GM for the Dodgers and the Yankees, two of the biggest franchises in all of sports, you've paid your dues. And, you know, there's zero hint of tokenism about this hire. I think it's a well-earned promotion that she's worked for a long time. I was very impressed by her.
I'm a little, man, she was doing everything right. Every clip I've seen was just like, she seems perfect. I got to admit, hearing her dog's name is Marley, I feel like that is just like the most common dog name. And I just, that made me think a little less of her, I have to admit.
Wow. Oh. See, that made me think more of her.
Well, the problem with this hire is because it took a former player of hers to become an owner of a team to hire instead of, you know, actual team presidents and team owners actually signing the hire. And that's a problem. That's an indictment on...
As somebody who totally has their entire profession based off who they know, I mean, a lot of life is about who you know and developing relationships. Like, I don't think she's the first person that got their first job as a GM because a player of their, you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like a lot of life is about relationships and people. Like, she knew Jeter because of, you know, earlier in her life. So I just feel like that's a common thing.
It's not just that, though. I mean, she was the former Yankees and Dodgers assistant GM. That's knowing people. You would think that somebody would put in a good word for her.
Oh, I'm sure they have. And that's probably why she's been interviewed for GM posts many times in the past. She talked about all the public rejection and all that. Roy, you're 100% right, but Christopher makes a valid point too. And I think it's true in sports more than in other walks of life. Everything is linear. If any coach hires an offensive line coach, there's some tie there to the past. The coach knows somebody who knows him well, et cetera. You never hire anybody from a cold, blind interview. So, yeah, you're right. She's got a background with Mattingly and with Jeter. And that's a big reason why she was hired, but it didn't mean they had to, you know, they could have played it safer and hired somebody who had been a GM for 8 years. You know, they could have done the equivalent of recycling an old white guy like Tony La Russa, but they didn't. I thought it was a bold, I'm not going to say daring because she's so qualified, but I thought it was a bold progressive move that speaks well for everybody. I think it's a great hire for the diversity of a diverse city and everything. I think it's just wonderful.
I mean, I think that is an important thing to point out. While she did have previous relationships with Jeter and Mattingly and the Yankees and the Dodgers, she didn't only get this job because of who she knew, right? And this isn't some token hire where she's just going to be there to be the first to have the job. If she's not good at the job, I'm assuming that she will face the same consequences that anyone who's not good at the job has. But, you know, it is something that should be celebrated and not kind of, I feel like we're coming off kind of nitpicky, like, well, you know, it took forever and she only got there because of who she knew and whatever. Like, this is a big moment in sports history for, you know, male sports. And she has a position no one's had. And now, you know, hope she does well. I think everyone thinks that she's in a good position to succeed. Hope she succeeds. And this leads to more people in her position getting hired.
Oh, she's absolutely qualified for the job. It just took entirely too long for her to get the job.
Yeah.
Or somebody
no doubt
of her stature to get the job.
No doubt.
Like, yeah, do better.
But one thing I mentioned in the column, which I think is really cool, is that she steps into a sports landscape in Miami where the Dolphins are the only NFL team with a black head coach and general manager. The Heat have a head coach of Filipino descent. The Hurricane football is head coached by a Cuban American. I mean, we've got it's pretty neat what we've got going down here.
The Panthers actually had a chance to hire a female general manager themselves, and they decided not to. Now, she's qualified as well, but let's see where the Panthers go with their hire. Anthony?
Thanks, Roy. It's not like the Marlins are going out on a limb here, right? Because if you take her resume and you do a blind resume test against somebody else that they could have hired that's a male, all of a sudden you're looking at her resume saying, wow, like this person has worked for the Dodgers, has worked for the Yankees, has worked in Major League Baseball. Like this is the person we need to hire. And then you reveal and all of a sudden, hey, it's Kim Ng. Like she's more than qualified to be in this position. It's not the token hire like everybody was saying. To my interest, this has been, and of course this started with Becky Hammond, obviously getting an assistant coach job in the NBA. And I can't remember the name of the woman who's the San Francisco 49ers, like defensive coach. I'm blanking on her name, but this is opening up now another wall and another door to the next, you know, league opening up stuff for women in the coaching ranks.
Yeah, and it's not only coaching. I mean, it's pretty common now. There's several women who are NBA referees. I'm watching the NFL game. It might have been last night's game. I saw a woman with a blonde ponytail.
That was Sunday night because you saw Belichick, in all fairness, like he was treating her the way he would treat any official.
Right.
He was like yelling at her because right. She did something he didn't believe in.
Exactly. But it's so cool, though. You know, it's like there was a time when the black quarterback was so rare that everybody talked about it and wrote about it, and now it isn't. And it's getting to be the same with like a woman referee.
Now, obviously, we all agree she was qualified for this. But also at the same time, it's a good PR move for the Marlins. Like, we can all agree on that. Both things can be true. And when Roy mentioned that the Panthers almost did this, like, I wonder if they're having meetings right now. Like, man, the Marlins are looking really good right now. Like, we should have done this. We could have been the Marlins.
I don't think that they're hiring people for PR moves when it
comes to
rebuilds.
I'm not saying they did it because it was a PR move. I'm not saying they did it because it was a PR move. I'm saying it just happens to be a good PR move on top of them doing it. I'm not saying they did it because of that. I'm just saying it happens to be a good PR move. The Panthers have to be kicking themselves in that PR department of just like, man, could have been us if they really were considering it, like Roy said.
Well, you know, you want to assume that the Panthers interviewed this woman in good faith, that they actually gave her a fair shot. Maybe they didn't. Who knows? I mean, the Rooney Rule in football can be manipulated and doesn't necessarily mean that when you're interviewing somebody, you really intend to hire them. And Kim Ng talked about having done some interviews for GM jobs in the past where she didn't feel like it was on the up and up. She felt like she was in there as a token publicity stunt or whatever. So, you know, you don't know a team's motives when they're hiring somebody, but this is an always, including what Christopher said, it's also good publicity for the club, not why they did it, but as a byproduct, the Marlins just look great nationally right now.
Greg, I want to get your thoughts on Ace Ventura. That's his new nickname. I don't know if you heard
Jesus
yesterday.
Jesus Christ, Chris.
Ace, his name is Ace because of accuracy, composure, elusiveness, and that's Ace Ventura. It's a great nickname. Like, it has to stick, and it needs to take off. I didn't think of it. Someone tweeted me that. I thought of Ace. Okay. Thought of Ace Ventura.
It's not.
It's good, Roy. Come on. But so what did you know, like three games in, we talked about it on the Greg Cody show. You can plug that as well. But just what's your assessment of Tua three games in?
Very favorable. And, you know, I defended him after his first start where everybody was like, oh, the defense carried him. We don't know how good he is yet. You know, first of all, three starts for a rookie three starts without an interception is alone a pretty significant thing, because with rookie quarterbacks, you know, bad decision-making and panicking leads to interceptions. And so he's gone three games with, I think, five touchdown passes and no interceptions and three wins. I think it's been all good. I think it's all good for Tua right now. And we do in the new Greg Cody Show podcast that you can get anywhere you listen to podcasts, we talked to Mina Kimes of ESPN about Tua, because she's a real NFL expert. I respect her knowledge of the game and the league so much. And she talks about Tua and about, you know, she's Asian American like Kim Ng. And I was curious about her thoughts on the Kim Ng hiring. So we talked about that as well.
All right. Moving on from Tua. Tony, there's some basketball stuff going on here. I need you to, you're our basketball expert, at least in this Zoom right here.
A whole bunch.
The Bucks traded for Jrue Holiday. That is not, like, that's something good. But what they gave up for him, it seems like they gave up as much. Are you aware of this trade, or am I, like, blindsiding you with this topic?
No. I'm aware. Go ahead.
Okay. And they gave up the Bucks. And I get the Bucks. They are incentivized to improve that roster because Giannis is probably putting the pressure on them. But it seems like they gave up as much for Jrue Holiday as the Lakers gave up for Anthony Davis. They gave up – they got George Hill – Eric Bledsoe and like three first round picks. Like, and I understand the Bucks need to make a move here for somebody like on Jrue Holiday's level. Is Jrue Holiday on the level of that kind of, you know, load to get for him in a trade?
I mean, no. flat answer is no. But he is one of the best defensive guards in the NBA.
Two-way guard, right? He's a good two-way.
Right. He's a really, really good defensive guard. And he's a good offensive player. I'm just looking now at Woj's timeline and like just trying to figure out exactly the depth of what the Bucks said here. Let me have Jrue Holiday. And it is crazy. Like, if you told me this got sent for Anthony Davis, I'd be like, okay, yeah, I get it. It makes sense. Cause I'm seeing here George Hill, Eric Bledsoe, three future first round picks to the Pelicans. Like, David Griffin is just fleecing people left and right. Like, he's doing an amazing job in New Orleans.
It's good for Stan.
Stan Van Gundy now is looking across the board and saying, okay, they've got, you know, major draft capital. To me, this is a desperate sign for Milwaukee because – and they just traded for Bogdan Bogdanovic from the Kings as well, who's a nice scorer. But
– the question is that enough? Is
no, this is a desperation move.
No, but, like, is Middleton, Giannis, and Jrue Holiday a good enough core – to keep Giannis? Like, that's no. Basically, they made that move so Giannis agrees to extend with them, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's a desperation move for the Bucks to say, look, we're all in for this year, but they bankrupted the future of getting good players and decent players across, you know, 2 or 3 years to try and keep him for the short term. Like, this is a sign to me that they are really scared of Giannis leaving. And the rumors and the writing on the wall is true, in my opinion, because of the fact that they're – if they didn't think that he would be going anywhere, they wouldn't have made a move, right? They would have been making little moves here and there. But the fact that they made such a big move tells me that they're scared.
And now you got James Harden trying to request the trade to the Nets.
Can we talk about James Harden avoid just saying no to $50 million? Can we talk about that for a second?
I mean, hasn't he already signed like a $450 million? Like, he already
has. That's insane. If someone offers you $50 million a year and you're just saying no, that's insane.
He must really hate it in Houston.
Guys, I understand all of us. Like, but James Harden has already, what was his last contract with Houston? Didn't he get 400 million? Like, if you're already in that realm, I think if I'm James Harden, I understand, you know what? That's not the most important thing. I'll take 38 million with the Brooklyn Nets. Like, I get that. I know it's ridiculous, but
$12 million on a rainy day isn't bad. You know what I mean?
He signed 4 years, $171 million.
Oh, so I was off. It was not $400 million.
It was
a little short of the
But it was still, it was at that time, it was the richest contract, I think, in the NBA.
It was like 40 a year. It was 40 a year. Right. I knew there was some number around 40.
Right. So he said 50, no. I'd rather, remember, he plays in Texas, no state tax. He's saying, I don't care about the $50 million. I'll go to New York, where I'm probably one of the heaviest tax states in the country, and play there. Like, it doesn't matter to me. I just want to get to – think about this. KD. Close what? Enough.
KD. Yeah.
He wants to go to KD and Kyrie. Like, that's the eventual place that he wants to go to, which seems like a bad fit.
Greg, how do you still have a landline? Like, you're the only person in – like, he mutes it now, so it takes away the comedic.
Kyrie and Kyrie.
Right. I'm looking at his Spo track, and I'm seeing how much. So this year he is – it looks like he's scheduled to make $41 million, right, which would bring his career earnings to $224 million. So if you take away that $40 million, that's $180 million that he had made previously. $50 million is essentially – between a third and a quarter of that in one season to what it's taken, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 10 plus years for him to make.
The question is, how much would he make with Brooklyn for that same time period? Like, he's going to get paid like at least half that amount. I know it's going to get taxed. It's a big cut. He's taking a pay cut. I'm just saying, I understand him. He's done being like, I can be the James Harden who shoots every time down the court. And I don't get any credit for that because in the playoffs, I'm all by myself and people think I stink. So I need to go somewhere with good players.
Yeah, but he's going to play with Kyrie.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you all think of the Chris Paul trade? Because I was a little Chris Paul is 35, I think. And he had a nice season last year. But before that, I think he'd gone 3 or 4 years without – making an all-star team, and you could have argued he was on the decline. What is he still worth, like, a bunch of stuff, including a first-round draft pick?
Not for the Suns.
I didn't think so either.
That's the thing. The Suns are not a team that's in contention. Like, they had Devin Booker, who was insane in the bubble, but that's a short, what, 10-game, 13-game sample? Like, any NBA player, like we saw with the guy from the Pacers, I'm blanking on his name, he went off for 15 games and he was the best player in the bubble, Tony something. And
I'm snapping my fingers.
It's Snell? It's not Snell.
No. Anybody got it?
Warren.
Tony
TJ
Warren.
TJ Warren. Look at us.
His first name is Tony.
We got
it. It's just TJ, man.
Come on.
Whatever. Anyways, it's early here. The Suns are in a weird place because they have a really good player with Devin Booker, and now they get Chris Paul to be what, like the ninth seed in the West? Excuse me. Like,
well, they have a third player. I saw some stat they put up, like in crunch time, like they have a third guy, like a guy. It's a young guy, Ayton or something. It rhymes with Ayton.
DeAndre Ayton. Okay,
yeah, that guy.
He was a top pick for them a couple years ago. But it's not like he's a Joel Embiid type player where all of a sudden he could take over a game and average, you know, 20 or 30 points. Like, this is just a curious move for a 10-time All-Star who's on the last legs. It almost seems like the Suns are trying to sell tickets when nobody's going to the arena.
Right, because it does seem like they're still like a couple years away, but you just traded for a guy who's only got like a year left. So you'd think that he would go to a team that's closer. Yeah, for sure. Greg, we got to get out of here. Send people into their Tuesday the way it needs to be done.
Well, I think you start by listening to the Greg Cody Show podcast. I mean, that's like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then you just have a beautiful week, everybody.
Well said.
Good job.
All right.